I'm here with Chris Abert with the Indiana Recovery Alliance. And could you tell me a little bit about Ian Stark and kind of the beginning of what is now the Indiana Recovery Alliance?
Sure. So, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, a young man named Ian Stark was found deceased in a stairwell. He had died from exposure. And a few friends and I thought that that was tragic, right, to say the least. And rather than just complain about it, we wanted to start to form relationships with people more that were on the streets. So we started doing outreach. We got bikes, bike trailers, blankets, coats, things like that, first aid supplies, camping supplies, and just started hitting the streets, giving out those supplies.
Where did you get that? Those supplies, the blankets and everything?
People's garages, people's closets.
Just spare ones that you had laying around?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what does that look like now? So that was a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So now what does the IRA look like now?
So out of that, we started hearing from people that they needed clean injection supplies, that they needed a myriad of other things, that there are huge gaps in services. So we started exploring different ways to deliver those goods. In the midst of all that, there was a largest HIV outbreak in the history of the country about an hour south of us in Scott County. Approximately 5% of a town down there lives with HIV now, primarily from IV drug use. So that changed the laws in the state pretty quickly in a reactionary way to be able to deliver these preventative services. So we jumped on board that. A few of us moved away from the other project and incorporated a nonprofit to be able to start to do full harm reduction, but still do exactly what we were doing before. So we still have bikes, we still have trailers, we still have, you know, these really close personal relationships with people who are experiencing homelessness and poverty.
And how many members have you grown to?
Members, as far as volunteers, we have approximately 10 to 15 that put in time every week, hundreds more that do community syringe pickup, going around trying to find syringes if they've been improperly disposed of. And as far as participants, we're about 1,600 participants for the region. Primarily, the vast majority of those are Monroe County.
So is that also Bedford and Ellettsville, or is it primarily focused in Bloomington, or do you get into the rural community at all, I guess?
Sure. So we don't do direct outreach in the rural community. It's difficult to figure out where you exactly would go. But definitely people come in from rural areas. We do outreach in Bedford once a week. We do outreach at Shalom twice a week. We have office hours, and then, of course, we have our bike outreach.
And can you talk a little bit, one of the biggest things it sounds like that you do is harm reduction. And what does that mean, harm reduction?
I think the easiest way to say it is that harm reduction is just looking realistically at the world and saying there are certain things that have always existed and that will always exist. For example, people have had difficulties with alcohol since we first started squishing grapes. So the idea then isn't to necessarily, you know, we want to curtail people living in chaotic drug use, right? We want to help them no longer live in chaotic drug use, but we also want to keep people alive. And one of the things that we've discovered is that if you collaborate with people by meeting them exactly where they are, and you ask them honestly what positive change looks like for them, that they'll tell you if you have a good relationship with them. So we try to find out what that looks like. So does that mean positive change is using clean syringes as opposed to sharing syringes? Does it mean positive change means moving away from a drug that's causing a lot of difficulties in your life to a drug that isn't causing as many difficulties? Does positive change mean abstinence, long-term abstinence? Does positive change? So it's all these things. So the short of it is that harm reduction is any positive change. And we know that the cumulative effects of these small positive changes within the population lead to tangible and large effects in our community as a whole. So this is good for the individual. It's good for the community. I think what I like about it most, too, is it connects people. despite the fact that they are continuing to engage in activities that tends to have them pushed to the margins of society so we can keep people connected. So what we want to do is we want to build honest relationships where people can actually tell us what they're experiencing in their lives. A good parallel is domestic violence, right? So oftentimes people will just continue to tell someone who is in a situation of domestic violence, you have to leave, you can't be there. Well, there are myriad reasons why a person can't leave. So then to just calm down on the prescriptive you have to, and open up a conversation about, okay, so you're in this difficult situation. What can we do now to keep you as safe as possible? And it takes a long time of, treating somebody with respect and dignity to be able to have those type of honest conversations where they feel comfortable enough to be vulnerable about what's really going on in their lives. And I don't think you can be helpful to really collaborative with a person at all if you have no idea what's actually going on in their lives, right?
So it's not like a holistic prescriptive approach. It's very much dependent on their willingness to engage.
It's absolutely driven by their willingness to engage. One of the nice things about it is I've been a social worker for 14 years, and this is the only non-coercive, truly collaborative work I've ever done. So there's nothing over anybody's head. Nobody's going to lose their kids. Nobody's going to go to jail or have their probation revoked. It really is 100% participant driven.
Does that get frustrating sometimes when you see somebody who had been making progress either backslide or change their goals or not want to work?
Honestly, when somebody, quote unquote, backslides, because I don't know, but when somebody has a setback from a goal that they had set for themselves and comes in, it's actually says everything. It says that we've done our job building good relationships where people feel comfortable enough to come in those circumstances. Because typically there's a lot of shame and guilt. So if we can build relationships where people show back up, they get a much different reaction from us because we're really happy to see them in that exact situation. Does that make sense? I would rather have a honest relationship with them where we could meet each other exactly where we were so that they didn't have to feel like they couldn't come in because they didn't meet my goal, right? So we're really clear with people that if they come in, whatever their goal is, that's their goal. And if their goal changes, we want to see them just as much as if they meet the goal as presently stated.